We're holding on Kuf Mem Hey Omer Beis, the last line of the narrow lines. The Gemara had brought yesterday a pasuk, Kol Yemei Oni Yiroyim V'Tov Lev Mishta Tamid. All the days of the poor person are bad, but the one who has a good heart, life for him is always a feast. So it's a pasuk in Mishlei. So the Gemara had explained. So yesterday the Gemara had kind of digressed. We mentioned yesterday a case where a person is getting married b'kumbi, meaning with a lot of publicity, and therefore the Gemara had brought a piece of Agadah that also uses the somewhat unusual word pumbi, where we talked about there are different kinds of rich people, a person whose riches are in land, for example, versus whose riches are in money, versus in grain or precious stones or whatever, and the Gemara had analogized them to various types of Talmid Chacham, a person who specializes in Agadta, which is very popular, a person who specializes in Pilpul, in Shmuas, in statements of Amiroyim on Halacha. And in this connection, then the Gemara had brought this pasuk, Kol Yemei Oni Yiroyim V'Tov Lev Mishta Tamid, that it's hinting at the contrast between a Baal Mishnah and a Baal Talmud, where Reb Zeira had said that the Kol Yemei Oni Yiroyim refers to the Baal Talmud because he has a lot of hardship delving into and understanding all the ins and outs of the methodology of the Gemara, and Tov Lev Mishta Tamid would be somebody who learns Mishnayos, which is much more straightforward, whereas Rava had said the other way around, because after all, with Mishnayos, you can't paskin halacha, and with Gemara, you could. So now the Gemara continues with more drushas on that pasuk, Kol Yemei Oni Yiroyim. And all of the drushas are driven by the point that on the face of it, we're saying that the first half of the pasuk is Kol Yemei Oni Yiroyim, all the days of the poor person are bad. So you expect the second half of the pasuk for parallelism should have, and the rich person, life is a constant feast for him. Instead, it changes it to Tov Lev, a person with a good heart. So that makes us realize we're not Stam talking about a poor person versus rich. We're talking about a different contrast. So the Gemara continues with Chanina Amar Kol Yemei Oni Yiroyim Zesh Yesh LaIsha Ra. When the pasuk says all the days of the poor person are bad, that refers to when he has a bad wife. So she makes his life miserable. The Tov Lev Mishta Tamid, but with a good-hearted person, life is a feast for him. Is a constant feast. Zesh Yesh LaIsha Isha Tova is when he has a good wife who helps him out, and then therefore life is good for him. We're actually currently learning in Ein Yaakov as well, in Yevamos, in the evenings over here. We're learning a piece of Gemara in Yevamos that talks about marriage and the importance of, and then what happens if a person has an Isha Tova versus the opposite. One thing is, the Gemara has an expression over there, that zocha kenegdoi, zocha ezer, loy zocha kenegdoi, if a person is zocha, then his wife helps him, and if not, she's kenegdoi, she's opposite him, where one point of that is also, it means that where he's acting the way he's supposed to, then the Eibishter makes it, that his wife, therefore, is good to him and helps him out, and that way it helps him in his avoda, whereas otherwise, then she opposes him in the sense that she puts him back onto the right path. So here, the Gemara may mean the same thing over here. When we say an isha ra, we may mean, actually, that superficially she seems bad, but really, in other words, she's helping him get back onto the right path. So until then, he feels it's a royim, but really, if he's Tov Lev, if he has a good heart, if he's doing the right thing, Mishta Tamid, then it's a constant feast, because then his wife helps him to grow in higher levels of avoda.
I'm assuming there's exceptions to the rule, because there's a whole Gemara about Bitzadikim who had the Shantas, who stopped them, gave him a hard time with learning,
that can be part of an Nisayon, that can be part of an Nisayonis that the Eibishter gives a person. I mean, mind you, we're not saying over here we're calling a person who has a bad wife, we're not saying he's a Rosh or anything, we're calling him Oni, he's a poor person, poor fellow, look what he has to deal with. Onward. The Rabbi Yannai Amar Kol Yemei Oni Yiroyim Ze'istinis. Rabbi Yannai says that the first half of the pasuk about the poor person always has a hard time is referring to an istinis, a very delicate person. So like everything easily, so he's easily nauseated and easily disturbed by anything that he sees that's not to his taste. So therefore he's always going to have a hard time. There's always going to be things that are, there are always going to be things around that are not, that are going to nauseate him or whatever. The Tov Lev Mishta Tamid, Zesha Daita Yafa, whereas the Tov Lev Mishta Tamid refers to a person who's not so finicky. And so he sees some dirt or whatever, and it doesn't bother him. So then, so life is good for him. He's not bothered. The Rashbam says he's not bothered by any dirt or by anything disgusting or whatever. So therefore, so he has a much easier time with it. Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Kol Yimei Oni Roim Zerachman. Rabbi Yochanan says Kol Yim, the first half of the pasuk, the all the days of the poor person are bad, refers to Zerachman. That refers to a person who is merciful. Now, of course, a Yid is supposed to have a trait of Rachmanus, by Shonim Rachmanim Gom Lachsodim, are the three basic midas of a Yid. But nevertheless, you can have where a person is over is too Rachman. He's always trying to pity everybody that he sees and trying to help him out. And meanwhile, he's neglecting what he needs for himself. The Tov Lev Mishta Tamid Zach Zori, the second half of the pasuk, the good-hearted person, life is a feast. It's always a feast. Zach Zori means a person who has a certain degree of achzorius, of cruelty. Obviously not, we don't mean he should be cruel. A Yid can't be cruel. But again, in other words, it means that he knows to take things in proportion. It's not like everything that he sees, he's going to be rushing all over to try to help the other person, because he's going to realize that you have to do things with a seichel. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi am kol yemei oni roim says zesh daita ktsara. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says the kol yemei oni roim refers to a person whose das is short. So the Rashbam explains that it means that he's stingy. So he's stingy with himself. He's stingy with others. Then there are other explanations as well. Daitek tzara can also mean that he's similar to the istinus, that there's a lot that he can't tolerate. Everything, he takes everything to heart and everything bothers him. You know, in Yiddish you have the expression a person is klein kepeldik. It literally means he has a small head, but it means he doesn't have the ability in his head to tolerate and to be able to handle things around him. So that would be the daitek tzara, that he's always having a hard time of it because things aren't always going to go to his liking. The Tov Lev Mishta Tamid, and the one who has a good heart, it's always a feast. Zesha Daitet Rechava, that means a person who has a broad mind and is more able to tolerate such kinds of things. Marsha discusses over here that there's a Gemara elsewhere. So Rashi actually in Sanhedrin, where this Gemara is also brought, explains that Daitek Tzara means somebody who gets angered very easily. So then Marsha relates all of this to a Gemara in Psachim. That the Gemara says over there are three people that Chayeim Einim Chayim. Their life is not really a life because they things are too difficult for them all the time. One is a person who has too much Rachmanus. One is a person who gets angry too easily. And the third is a person who's too nauseated easily. So therefore, those are the three that we're mentioning over here. That each one of them, because of that trait of theirs, because of that midah of theirs, then they're going to have a hard time managing with things around them. In particular, Marshall mentions, so you have as far as the one who's finicky, for example, the istinis. So the Gemara mentions over there. That Rava used to drink a lot of wine on Erev Pesach in order to arouse his appetite for matzah. Meanwhile, Rav Sheshes, if he ate or drank at all on Erev Pesach, it would ruin his appetite. So he would have to, practically speaking, he'd have to fast the whole day. So there you have that contrast. Rav Sheshes is the Kol Yimei Oni Roim. The whole day he has to sit there fasting, and it's not so good for him. Whereas Rava, who's not the Issinis, who's quite the opposite, as the Gemara calls him, Daita Yafa, then he's able to constantly drink. On Erev Pesach, he can drink and enjoy his wine, and that'll arouse his appetite for the matzah. And Marashar goes on to discuss in other ways as well. For example, the Rachman, somebody who's too much Rachman, look at Shaul, he had Rachmanus on Agag, and he lost his kingship because of it. On the other hand, a person who's Achzer in the proper way, then he has a good time of it. And the Daita Ktsara, and Daita Rechava is where he gets angry easily versus where he stays calm. The Gemara continues, but Amar Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi, here's another thing Rabbi Yishuv ben Levi said on the subject. Now, the Pasuk is saying, Kol Yemei Oni Royim, all the days of the poor person are bad. So you have to wonder, I can understand on weekdays, sure, because he has very little to eat. Well, Ika Shabbos is Yom Tov, but what about Shabbos and Yom Tov? Where he has more food, even if he's poor. And Ashbam points out that the Gaboy Tzedakah would give out extra food to the poor people so they could have a nice Shabbos meal. So the answer is Kiddush Shmuel. The answer is even then, he ends up in a bad way along the lines of what Shmuel says. The Amar Shmuel, Shinui Ves Tchilas Choli. Shmuel says, and Shmuel was a doctor, that a change of habits, a change of routine, is the beginning of stomach aches. So in other words, if you have this poor person the rest of the week, he's eating, for example, dry bread, and then on Shabbos he's eating meat, that itself is likely to give him stomach troubles. So therefore, in that sense, Kol Yemei, all the days of the poor person are bad, because on weekdays he has very little to eat, and on Shabbos, when he eats more, then it gives him an upset stomach. There is an explanation, actually, that says this is why there's the Indian to taste the Shabbos food on Erev Shabbos. That way, your stomach is a little more used to it, and that way, you won't have that hard time of it on Shabbos. They also say, you know, in Yiddish, you have the expression for a person who is really, really desperately poor, you call him a gesunter oder Mann. Literally means a healthy, poor person. Why healthy, Dafka? Why not some other adjective based on this Gemara over here? Because if he's so poor that he can't even afford good food for Shabbos, well, then he's healthy on Shabbos because then he doesn't have that shimmy vest. He doesn't have that change of routine, and therefore he doesn't have the chole me'ayim, the stomach aches. So that's part of this call you may only roy him as well. Then the Gemara brings the Sefer Ben Ksiv the Sefer Ben Sira. Furthermore, it says on this topic in Sefer Ben Sira. We've talked about Sefer Ben Sira before. It's a Sefer from the author lived at the beginning of the second Beis Hamikdash. He was a grandson of Yirmiyah. He wrote a Sefer. It wasn't written by Ruach HaKodesh, which is why it's not included in Tanakh, but it has various proverbs and things in there. Parts of it are in the style of Sefer Mishlei. The Gemara discusses in Sanhedrin in some detail. We'll get to it in a few months, Bez Hashem, about whether you're supposed to learn from it or not. The Gemara says that really it's Sforim Achitzonim, it's books that are outside of Tanakh, and we're not supposed to be reading them. There are even some silly things in it, but nevertheless, the Gemara often says that there are some valid things in it, and you can learn and darish in those valid things. Anyway, so it says in Sefer Ben Sira that when the Pasuk in Mishlei had said, Kol Yemei Oni Royim, all the days of the poor person are bad, Ben Sira Oima Af Leilas. Ben Sira says, not just the days, but also the nights. Because, consider this poor person, Bishfal Gagim Gagoy, his roof is the lowest one in town because he can't afford to build a taller house. So it's a Bishfal Gagim Gagoy, his roof is the lowest of all the roofs, therefore Mimitar Gagim Lagagoy, the result is all the rain from all the other roofs pours off onto his roof. The Rum Horim Karmai, and where is his vineyard? If he can afford a vineyard, it's only going to be at the top of a mountain, because there the land, the quality of the land is not so good, and you have to schlep up there, so it sells for more cheaply, so that would be the only place he might be able to afford to buy a vineyard. And what happens, even at night, Ma'afar Karmai Lekrumim, the wind and the rain and whatever take his topsoil and his fertilizer or whatever, and wash them down the slope into other people's, into other people's vineyards. So it comes out, even by night, things are not so good for him, because even by night, rain from other people's roofs is pouring onto his, and the topsoil and fertilizer from his vineyard is going into other people's. Marsha points out it's not only as far as the rain and as far as the topsoil. Consider the beginning of the Masechta talks about the concept of Hezek Re'iyah, where you might be at home or in your chotzer or whatever, and somebody is peeking in. And you have it's a hezek, and therefore you have dinim about putting up fences and walls and all kinds of things like that. Here, where he has the lowest roof, meaning the lowest house, in other words, more people are able to look into his house, so he has more of a problem of that. And as far as the vineyards, the point is not only that, not only as we're saying that the topsoil and everything washes off, but you have the case at the end above Matzia where you have two gardens or two garden plots, one on higher ground than the other, and you have something growing in between them where you have a machlokas over there. To whom do those plants that are growing on the wall between them, to whom do they belong to? And Reb Shimon says basically that the one higher up is going to be able to get part of it, and the rest of it is going to go to the bottom one. So here you have something that's growing out of his dirt. It's growing in the wall of dirt between him and the person below him, and it winds up going, and part of it at least winds up going to the other person. Me'afar karma, the very dust that his vineyard is growing in, goes to other part. Some of what grows over there ends up going to other people. So therefore, so Ben Sira is saying by night also a poor person is not having an easy time of it. All right. The Mishnah says, we learned in the previous Mishnah about we talked about the Shoshvinus, about the mutual aid society for weddings, where Reuven would participate in Shimon's wedding and give him a gift that would help towards the wedding expenses. And eventually the expectation was when Reuven gets married, then Shimon will reciprocate. And we talked about all the dinim of that. So now we have, there's another set of gifts that come together with a wedding, namely from the chosin to the kala. This week's parasha, we have when Eved Avraham, when Eliezer comes in and is Makadish Rivka afterwards, after her family agrees to the Shidduch, then the pasuk by Yotzer Eved, he took out gold and silver kalim and clothes for Rivka and Migdonos, fruits from Eretz Yisrael for the rest of the family. So those are all gifts from the Chosin, or in this case, from the Chosin's Shliach to the Kala. So now we're going to talk about the dinim involving those. So the Mishnah says, Hashileach sivloinus leveis chomir. When a person sends, a chosin sends sivloinus, which are gifts, to his father-in-law's house. So the Rashbam describes that after the Kiddushin, the next day, he would send, in honor of his wife, various kinds of jewelry and peiros and jugs of wine and oil, and then sometimes he would also eat the suda with them as well. So now what happens is he did all of that. He was Makadisher, and then he sent all these sivloinus. And then afterwards he divorces her or one of them dies. So now he or his Yoshim are claiming back. He's saying, wait a second, the whole point of the Kiddushin and the sivloinus was that we should go to marriage, and that didn't end up happening. So I want these things back. So the Mishnah says, so even if he sent there 100 monas worth of gifts, but he ate there a suda of the chosan, even if that suda was equal in value only to a dinner, and a dinner typically might be the amount of food that a person might eat at one suda. Yesterday we had, the Gemara had mentioned in this connection, a zuz and a dinner are the same thing. So typically it might happen that a person would eat a dinner slash zuz worth of food. So if he did that, ain nigbin, then he can't collect back the sivloinus, no matter if either of them died or if he divorces her, etc. The fact that he had the simcha over there, that he ate and drank with them at that simcha, means that he was moichel on the sivloinus. Although the Mishnah is going to distinguish, and the Gemara is going to explain that there are actually different types of sivloinus in this regard. You have to consider there are sivloinus that are meant to be used up, for example, food, and then there are sivloinus that are not meant to be used up, like clothing and jewelry. We're going to see there's going to be a distinction between them. But the point is, since he had that simcha with them, so we assume that he gave them those sivloinus as matana gmura, as an outright gift. Now, the wording of the Mishnah seems to be implying that he actually ate the suda with them when he sent the sivloinus, and the Torah says just that. The Beis Yosef wonders about that and says, why should it be necessary? The fact that he sent the sivloinus and he ate with them, maybe that should be enough. Maybe that would be the same kind of thing, even if he didn't actually eat at the time of the that he sent the sivloinus. There is actually, in addition, within that, there's a machlokas rishonim. When were these gifts given? The Rashbam clearly says we're talking about after the kiddushin, and then the Ritva also mentions, and he says that if it was gifts before the kiddushin, you're not going to say because he had a suda there, he would be moichel on them. On the other hand, you have in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah understands the Rashba to be saying differently and saying that it would apply even to gifts before the Kiddushin. And then in turn, the Taz disagrees with the Ramah and says that the Rashba is not talking about that before Kiddushin, that it only applies like the Rashbam and the Ritva say after Kiddushin. So there is a machlokas on that subject. Continues the Mishnah. So again, he had sent these sivloinus, and let's say everybody agrees that we're talking about after Kiddushin, and then again you have maybe the possibility, according to the Ramah's understanding of the Rashba, that we're talking about even before Kiddushin. He ate there a sudas chosen, so even if he only ate one dinner and he had sent them 100 manas worth of presents, nevertheless he doesn't get them back because he was moichel on them because of the simcha that he ate with them. Loy ochel shom sudas chosen, but if he didn't eat the suda of the chosen with them, harelu nigbin, then he's entitled to collect them back if the wedding falls through for any reason. Continues the Mishnah. Shalach sivloinus
we don't say that he enjoyed the food that he ate. That was his enjoyment. Why would that include the presents that he gave?
Because we're saying that because the Rashbam uses the expression shemachmas chiba simcha sachila, because of the love of the simcha that he ate together, shochav shos of a samachimah, that he ate and drank and rejoiced with them, mochal sivloinus asuin livlois, therefore levalois, therefore any sivloinus that are going to get used up like food or whatever, then he's mochal on. So the ones that are not
he brought the food, or they gave him the food.
We're talking about he brought sivloinus. He brought, or he had sent presents that are meant for the Kala and her family. So now, again, we're talking about when we say that if he ate there, then he can't get them back. We're talking about he sent food. He sent, for example, food or money or other things like that that are going to be used up. We're going to see in the Gemara what happens about, for example, clothing and jewelry and things like that, which are not meant to be used up.
Right. Okay.
But, yeah. Okay. Mishnah continues. Sholach sivlonis merubin, if he sent a large amount of gifts, sheyachzir imel abeis baila, and together with it, he explained that these are not meant for her to use while she's still living with her parents. These are that she should bring them when she gets married, and she'll continue to use them after they get married. Now, the Rashbam points out, the same thing with, doesn't really matter, merubin or not, but practically speaking, usually, you would give a large amount, you would say that this is meant for after we get married and we're living together, as opposed to a small amount would usually be that she's going to use them during the time of the Erusin. The Mishnah mentions in Ksubas that usually in those times, they had 12 months between the Erusin and the Nisuin. During that time, she'd be preparing everything she needs for the wedding, all her clothing and jewelry and everything, So when you have mu'atin, a small amount, then it would probably be used during that time. If it's merubin, then usually it would be that it would be meant for her to use after the wedding. So now he said to her specifically that these are meant to be used after the wedding in her father's, in her husband's house, harelim nigbin, then he is entitled to collect them back if the wedding falls through for whatever reason. Because then he made it clear that it's meant for after the wedding, and in this case, the wedding is not happening. Sivloinus mu'otin, but if it was a small amount of sivloinus, shetishtamash behen bebesavia, where the point is that she'll be able to use them in her father's house before the wedding. Ain nigbin, then he's not entitled to collect them back, because then again, we say that he was moichel on them. So the Rashbam explains, the first case of the Mishnah is he didn't specify one way or the other. Therefore, we have to go based on whether he ate a sudas chosin with them. Here in the Sefer, we're talking about he specified one way or the other, so then it goes according to that. And again, we don't specifically mean it's not specifically a difference between a large and a small amount. It's just the usual way is a large amount means that these are things that are meant to be available for her after the wedding too, when she's living with him, her husband, and the smaller amounts would usually be that she'd be using during the year that she's still going to be living with her parents. Okay. So on the first part of the Mishnah about where the chosin eats the soda over there, Omar Rava Davka dinner. So Rava says, when we say that he ate a dinner's worth of food over there, and then it means that he's moichel on all the sivloinus, That would be dapka if he ate a dinner's worth of food. Ava pochas mi dinner loy, but if he ate less than a dinner's worth, then he's not moichel. It says, pita, obviously dinner tanan, the Mishnah had said a dinner. So obviously it means that if he ate less than that, then he's not moichel. And the answer is, mao de tema, without Rava telling us, you would have thought, hu a din dafila pochas mi dinner, maybe the same din would apply even if he ate less than a dinner's worth of food, bahai de katani dinner urcha de milsa katani, and it says a dinner just because that's the usual way, typically a person eats about a dinner's worth of food. So you would think, though, that if he ate less, then still the same din would apply. Kamash Malan, therefore, Rava tells us that no. Okay. So the Gemara says, Ochal Tnan. Now, the Mishnah had said that if he ate a dinner's worth of food over there, what about Shosamai? What about if he only drank a dinner's worth of drinks over there? Would we say that he was Moichal on Sivloinus because of that Simcha or not? Also, Hutnan, the Mishnah had said, where he himself brought the Sivloinus, Shluchai Mai, what about if he sent, as far as picking up the Sivloinus, as far as getting them back, what about if he himself, instead of coming to take back the Sivloinus, what if he sent his Shliach, and the Shliach ate with them? Would that be enough for us to say that he was Moichlan or not? Shtom Tnan, also the Mishnah is saying that it says he ate there in his father-in-law's house. Shigur Loimai, what about if his father-in-law sent him food and he ate it in his house? So is the Mishnah saying, Dafka, if the Chosen himself comes and eats in his father-in-law's house, and each of those is significant, or is one or another of those things fungible, and we can say it doesn't matter whether it was him or his shliach, it doesn't matter whether he ate or just drank, and it doesn't matter whether it was in the father-in-law's house or not. The Gemara says, Toshma, let's try to bring a proof from the following case. The Omer of Yehuda Omer Shmuel, Maisa ba'odam echad sheshigur leveis chomiv, it happened with a certain person, a chosen, that he sent to his father-in-law's house, mea kronis shokade yayim shokade shemen, he sent him 100 wagon loads full of barrels of wine and barrels of oil, v'shok klei kesef, v'shok klei zahav, v'shok klei milas, and of silver and gold kalim, and silk clothing. So this guy was very, very rich, and he was able to afford a huge amount of sivloinus. The rocha v'simchosai, so then he was riding on his horse in his simcha. He has such a simcha that he has, that he's gotten engaged, that he's been makadish this woman, and that he's so happy over the huge amount that he was able to send us sivloinus. V'holach v'omen al pesach beis chomiv, he went and stood by the entrance of his father-in-law's house. V'otziel kois shochamen, they brought him out a cup of a hot drink, v'shosa, and he drank umes, and then after that he died before the wedding. So now the question is, again, would his Yoshim have the ability to say, you know what, since the wedding didn't take place, we want all those 100 wagon loads back? V'zu halocha heler ramacha sar habira lifnei chachamim la'usha. So ramacha sar habira, that was his title, it's not clear what sar habira means. We do find the word bira is used to refer to the Beis HaMikdash, so maybe it means that he had been still in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, he had had some distinguished position there in the Beis HaMikdash, or maybe it means something else. Whatever, he brought this case to the chachamim in Usha. As we've learned before, the Sanhedrin went into Golos a number of times during and after the Churban, and one of the places where they were located twice during the decades after the Churban was in the city of Usha in the north of Eretz Yisrael. So Rav Acha Sarabira went to the Sanhedrin, went to the Chachamim in Usha to ask him this Shaila. The Omru, when they answered, Sivloinus Hasuyin Livalois, it depends, the Sivloinus that are meant to be used up before the wedding, ein nigvin, those cannot be collected. So in other words, the wine and the oil, some of it anyway, is meant to be used up before the wedding. It's not something that she's going to be bringing with her to her chosen's house after they get married. So those would not be able to be collected since he drank that cup with them. But the ones that are not meant to be used up, for example, the clothing and the jewelry, nigvin, then those can be collected back by the chosen's yoshin.
We don't say that what he drank wasn't not worth a dinner.
That's what the Gemara is going to ask. That's the Gemara is that's what the Gemara is going to ask. Tosfos actually points out. Now the Mishnah had said Mu'otin and Merubin, and the Rashbam had pointed out that usually Merubin she brings with her to her house, to her chosen's house, where after they get married, and the Mu'otin are usually the ones that she uses in her father's house. Tosfos points out that actually it might be that that really when we say Mu'otin, we're saying the lesser the smaller amounts than Ein Nigbin. The Mishnah had said we can't collect them back. So Tosfos says maybe that means it has to be both. It has to be mu'atin, and it has to be that the and it has to be that that. Well, no, actually, Tosfos says so. There's two possibilities. So one is that it means that merubin and mu'atin means exactly that. Merubin would be the equivalent of ein asuin levalis. They're not meant to be used up so fast. Mu'atin would be where they're going to be used up so fast. Then Tosfos says maybe what it means is when it's mu'atin and it's ein asuin levalis. Then he wouldn't be able to collect it back. But if it's merubim, then even if it's asurim levalis, he would still be able to collect them back because it was merubim. So in other words, the second possibility in Tosfos is that merubim and muatin is not the same as asurim levalis and ain't asurim levalis. So it would be in order to, so in three of the four cases, he would be able to collect it back according to that second explanation in Tosfos. If it was merubin either way, whether it's things that are going to be used up, whether it's going to be things that are meant to be used up like wine and oil or not. And in the case of muatin, if there's things that are meant to be used longer term. In any case, in this case over here that Rabbi Yehuda is telling us over, so they're making the distinction between asuri and levalis, between the ones that are going to be used up and not. Now, the point is, shmami nafilu shosa. So therefore, you see, even if he only drank, so there would be the answer to that. So even if he only drank and didn't eat, then the same din would apply. We would say that he's moichel on the sivloinus, or at least part of them. Shamat minafilu pachas midinu. And furthermore, it seems to mean that even if he drank less than a dinner, why we wouldn't assume that a hot drink that they gave him is worth an entire dinner. Amar Avashi, but Avashi says at least as far as that point, not necessarily. Man le malon, because who says that it was Sam a hot drink? It could be. We're talking obviously about very rich people. Look at the size of the Sivloinus. This guy said, maybe man, so Avashi says, man le malon, the le shachki le magnisi, the shalfa al, the shavya alfa zuzi. How do you know? They might have taken a pearl, which is worth 1,000 zuz, and ground it up for ashke, and they mixed it into his drink. As sorim, as noblemen and princes sometimes do that. They do that for refuah. So therefore, the drink might indeed have been worth a lot more than a dinner. So fine. You can show from that that if he drank, then the same din would apply. But you can't necessarily show that it applies even less if it was less than a dinner, like which would be against the rabba, because maybe in fact the drink was worth a lot more than a dinner.
I would go with a bottle of wine that these days you can get a $200 bottle of wine.
Well, that's true, but the expression is that they gave him a hot drink. You don't usually drink wine hot. Plus also the entire bottle might be worth a couple of hundred. Here we're talking about that they just gave him one drink. So the Gemara continues. Now, we could also apparently see from the story that even if they only sent him the food, then he's also moichel, because after all, he didn't go inside to drink the cup of the hot drink. He drank it outside. So the Gemara says not necessarily. You could argue that when he's standing right outside the door, it's the equivalent of being inside. It's not the same thing as if they had sent him, a delivery at home, where then maybe the din would be different. So we don't have a proof about a number of the dinim that we're saying over here. So the Gemara continues, Iboilahu. Now we have another question. Suppose that he ate, now here we're talking about if he ate a dinner's worth of food, then we're saying that he's moichel on the, sivloinus. What about Iboilahu Maushi Shalish? What about, do we prorate it? Do we say, in other words, let's say, so he ate half a dinner's worth of food. Would we say then that maybe he's moichel on half of the sivloinus, or not? What about So when Rava had said, in other words, when Rava had said that if he ate a dinner, then he's mochel, but less than a dinner, not, maybe even if he ate less than a dinner, then still we would still prorate it, and she would collect, and she'd be able to keep a certain amount of the sivlonis. Another question is shvach sivlonis mahu. What about if the sivlonis have gone up in value? Where after he brought them, so he brought the sivlonis, then, and he ate with them, and now, let's say, for example, he sent them animals, and over time those animals gave birth to other animals. So now, if they have to return him the sivlonis, do they have to return him the shvach also? Would we say kiven de'i isnu l'didei? If the sivlonis themselves are still in existence hadri, then they would have to return them. So therefore, birshusei shvach. So it comes out that the improvement, for example, the baby animals that were born is considered in his rishus. Or dilma, or maybe not. Kiven de'i abdi and miganvi. Consider if those animals or whatever sivlonis were to be lost or stolen, boi shalumile, they would have to pay him. But they would only have to pay him for the original value. So you could argue that they improve in value. It's considered in her reshus. In other words, basically the question boils down to, the Ritva says, do we consider it a pikodin? And therefore, so if they ate them, it's like shaleach yad v'pikodin, it's like misusing a pikodin, and therefore they become chayav to pay when they ate it. Or do we consider it? It's not considered like gezel, it's not considered like shlichus yad, because they figured the wedding is going to take place, so therefore it would be considered more as if like it broke on its own. So the Gemara says teiku. So on that and on the previous questions, teiku. So the result is, of course, that moitzim mechaveil abaraya. Okay. The Gemara continues, boi rava, sivlonis hasurin libolos. What about if you have sivlonis that are of the type that are usually going to get used up. And we said that those kind, he's not entitled to get them back. So for example, food and things like that. What happens if, after all, what about veloy bolu? What about if they didn't end up getting used up? So here he had sent sivlonis of various kinds, including ones that are asurin libolos, ones that are typically going to be used up. But in this particular case, they didn't end up using them, Is he entitled to get them back or not? So the Gemara says Toshma. So let's bring from that story we said before. V'zu halacha heler of Acha Sar Habira lifnei Chachamim v'Usha. We said that Acha Sar Habira had brought the Shaila to the Chachamim in Usha. In that case, with the guy with the enormous amount of sivlonis and the hot drink, the Amru and the Chachamim had said sivlonis hasuim libolus ein nigbin. Sivlonis that are typically used up cannot be collected back because those he was moichel on. V'she'en asuim libolus nigbin, but the ones that are not usually going to be used up can be collected back. So when we say asuim libolus, when we say that they're normally used up, my love, afagav de leibolu. So it sounds like even though they didn't actually get used up, but because there's something that usually is meant to be used up, then therefore he can't get them back. So that would be the answer, that even though, as long as it was, for example, food, even if it wasn't actually used up, he still wouldn't get them back. Not necessarily, it could be debolu. It means that they're meant to be used up, and in fact they were used up. We don't require them to repay for those. So you can't prove one way or the other from that story. The Gemara says Toshma, fine, but let's bring a proof from the Mishnah had said Sivlonis Mu'otin Shetishtamish Behen, that if he sent her a small amount of Sivlonis, that she should use them Behiba Vesavia when she's still living in her father's house before the wedding, Ein Nigbin, then those can't be collected. So it sounds like it doesn't matter whether. When it comes to before the case from Acha Sar Habira, and we had the expression Asurin Libolos, so we can say they're meant to be used up, and in fact they were used up. But the Mishnah is saying, as a blanket statement, anything that she's meant to be using in her father's house, implying whether she actually used it or not, whether it still exists, Be'ein or not. Now the Rashbam points out, the Gemara could have answered that we're talking about things that are not meant to be used up and worn out, or we're talking about where they were, but instead the Gemara is going to give a different answer. So the answer is, So Tugma Rava, the Yeva Vesavka, the Usvachta. The answer is that Rava explained that the Mishnah, when it mentions about Sivlonis Mu'otin that are meant to be used when she's still living at home with her parents, is talking about, for example, that he sent her Yeva and Sivchasa, which are various kinds of hair ornaments. So things like tichols and barrettes and things like that that he sends on them, so that he sends for her. So those are small things. They're not so choshuv. So there he's mochel on whether they still exist when the engagement is broken or not. So the question is more about major tachshitim, like rings or necklaces or other expensive things like that. We're not talking about this yeva v'sivchasa, which are cheap things. So they're those he's mochel on. Those he's mochel on regardless. So the Gemara continues. So no proof, in other words, whether they're ones that are meant to be hasurim livolus, we expect them to be used up during the time, but they didn't get used up, then we don't really have a solid proof one way or the other. We can say if they got used up, if it was food, for example, and they ate it, they don't have to return it in this case. But if it was something that's still left, where the food is still left over, would they have to return it? And then we don't have it clearly one way or the other. Fine. The Gemara continues. In short, the final halacha, the Rambam formulates it, and basically this is how it is in Shulchan Aruch is as follows. He sends Sivlonis, with a lot or a little, In general, all of the Sivlonis get returned except for the food and drink, and also these small kalim, like these small hair things or whatever that are meant to be used up while she's living at home. But other than that, basically everything else gets returned. What about, by the way, this is all talking about if he dies or she dies, or if he breaks the, if he breaks it off and decides to divorce her, what happens, by the way, if she wants to back out of it and she wants a divorce, that we're going to talk about on Omid Beis. So the Gemara continues, Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. So now Rav Yehuda tells us in the name of Rav another story involving a person who sent Sivlonis to his father-in-law's house, to his Kala and her family. Amar Rav Yehuda, Amar Rav. Maisa ba'odam echad sheshigur leveis chomiv. There was a person who sent as Sivlonis to his father's house, to his father-in-law's house, Yayin Chodosh, new wine that had just been pressed from the grapes. The shemen chodesh, new oil, or clay pishton chodesh, and new linen clothing. But seres, all this was shavuos time. Now shavuos time, usually you don't have these kinds of things, are generally not available yet. Grapes, for example, are usually harvested in Elul time. You usually have, when do you have newly pressed wine, is usually around Elul Tishrei time. He already shavuos, so he already has these things available to give to his kala. So the Gemara says, "My Kamash Malan." Well, what is Rav Yehuda telling us with this story? So, Iboris Ema Chashivusa Deretz Yisrael Kamash Malan. One possibility he wants to tell us about the greatness of Eretz Yisrael. That you see, Eretz Yisrael, the crops ripen so fast and so early over there that yes, you can have things that normally might only be available later in the season, but in Eretz Yisrael, he's able to get them even earlier. The Barisema, another thing that Rabbi Yehuda wants to inform us with that, the Itoyin, what about if he were to claim later on, he's saying, you know what, I sent new wine and oil to my kala before Shavuos, and now because we're not getting married in the end, then I want it back. Tanose Taina, then it's a valid Taina, and we don't say that he's lying, because we say that in Eretz Yisrael, such things are possible, and it is indeed plausible that he sent such things in Eretz Yisrael, even Shavuos time, because they're available in Eretz Yisrael then. Now, of course, what will happen is he'll have to swear on it, or whatever. The point is, if it was impossible, we wouldn't even bother. Basically, we'd just throw out the whole case because they'd say you obviously don't know what you're talking about. Such things are impossible. But the fact that Rabbi Yehuda is telling us it is in fact possible and here and it actually happened. Okay. Now the Gemara tells Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Rav. Now here we're going to have a story, which what we derive from this story, there's quite a few explanations among Rishonim. So let's first learn the story, and we'll try to understand what the implications of it are. Maisa ba'adam echad sha'omru loy, there was a certain man where people told him, ishtei toturonisi. His wife is a toturonis, which means that she doesn't have a sense of smell. So there's two basic possibilities with this part of the story. Are we talking about that they were already married, or are we talking about where they've only done kiddushin and they've not done the nisuin yet? So we'll talk about soon the Rashbam and Tosfos and other Rishonim argue on that point. The point is one thing is we back in Masechet Ksubos we learn that when a man is mekadesh a woman, usually he expects that she's not going to have any mumim, and if she has any of various mumim, typically the kinds that would make a kohen possible to do the avodah, then it's a valid reason to claim that it was a mekach tos, and he wouldn't have married her, and he wouldn't have been mekadesh her knowing that. After it gets to the nisuin, actually, it's a little bit different because then the Gemara says that by the time of the nisuin, he will have thoroughly checked it out, and then if he still married her anyway, then it means that he was moichel on that. That's part of what drives the discussion over here, whether we're talking about that here it was only they had done erusin but not kedushin, that is, but not nisuin, or are we talking about that they were already married and he's looking for a reason to divorce her? Anyway, the nichnas acharei lachur v'lavoidga. So he followed her into a ruined house to test her. He wants to test her sense of smell. He brings along with him something for her to smell. So here also you have two explanations of what he brought along. He's going to mention to her a radish. So does that mean he actually brought a radish with him? Or the other possibility is that he actually brought with him a date, which of course a radish and a date smell much different. Omallah, he says to her, Reach snoin ani meriach the golil. I smell the smell of a radish in the golil. This story happened near the golil, the northern region of Eretz Yisrael. So one possibility is that he actually brought with him a radish, and he's mentioning the smell of a radish to see what she's going to respond to that. I smell the smell of a radish. What is she going to respond to that? Or the other possibility is that no, he had with him a date, which smells much different, but he's pretending as though he has a radish and he's going to see what she's going to answer. So she answers him in a joking way. Man yohivon mikosvus yericho v'achal nabei. If only somebody would give us some of the dates of Yericho. Yericho is famous for its date for its date groves v'achal nabei, and we would eat it together with the radish because the radish is sharp and therefore so you eat something sweet with it. So in other words, the Rashbam explains that she realized that he's trying to test her, so therefore, like, she answered in a joking way. You have a radish with you, but you know what? A radish is actually good to eat together with a date. Or according to the second possibility, that to begin with, he took a date with him and not a radish. Then when he mentioned a radish, then she's saying, you know what? I don't smell any radishes over here. I smell a date. Anyway. The nuffle, so now, after that, nuffle aleh churvo mesa. Then the wall of that ruined building that they were in collapsed on her and she died. So now the question is, so the Rashbam's preferred explanation is that, well, the question is going to be, the Gemara is going to say whether he yarshins her. The Rashbam's preferred explanation is that they were married already. They were married already. So now the question is, we learned in the previous perek that a husband typically yarshins his wife. So now that his wife died in the collapse of the building over there, is he entitled to yarshin her? So the Chum said, Hovel and Nichon Asachareh, Elul Abodka, since he followed her into that wound only in order to test her, and that means, and if he found that she doesn't have a sense of smell, then he would use that as a reason to divorce her, so therefore he already has in mind to divorce her, so therefore, Eino Yosha, therefore he doesn't yarshin her. Because once he has in mind, to divorce her, then he doesn't yarshin her anymore. So this is not, so the reason why we're bringing in this story, it's not really directly related to anything that we were learning about Sivlonis, but it was another case where Rabbi Yehuda had brought a story, where Rabbi Yehuda the Amora had brought a story, and we're deriving a halacha from it. So then the Rashbam says, that, yeah, his preferred explanation is we're talking about that they were married, and he's trying to see whether he should divorce her. Then the Rashbam brings that there are some who learn that we're talking about that she was an Arusa. They hadn't yet gotten married. It was only during the time of the Kiddushin. But the Rashbam, and therefore he wants to see, in other words, whether she has this mum, and if so, then he's going to break the Kiddushin and divorce her. But the Rashbam says that doesn't really work out. Then he wouldn't be yarshining her regardless, because an orus doesn't yarshin from his arusa until they go into the chuppah. So we're talking about that they were already married.
And since when do we go to according to someone's machshava? Machshava like a dibur, you know, he had
so a mind. We see that if there was a katata, if there was an argument between them, and he has plans to divorce her, then already he's not yarshining over here. Gemara in Gittin mentions mishin nosan ein of the garsha. For example, you have that once he decides to divorce her, he doesn't get payrus from her nechasim anymore, from her nechasim alug. In the same vein, then we're saying that we would derive from this that once he has in mind to divorce her, then he wouldn't yarshin her. That's how the Rashbam learns the story. Now, Tosfos brings that no, we are in fact talking about an Arusa. Again, he wanted to see whether she has this mum or not, and therefore whether he's going to go through with the wedding. But he didn't go in for Nisuin. If they had gone into this rune for Nisuin, where they're going to have relations over there, then fine, she would be his wife, and therefore he would yarshin her. But here, now Tosfos also explains that we're talking about that this churva belongs to him. So now, in other words, the point is, for the first time, she'd be exclusively in his reshus, and therefore the Nisuin would take place over there. So had it been that they were going in there for the purpose of Nisuin, and she died, then in fact he would yarshin her, now that we're talking about, because it was his churva, and therefore she's exclusively in his reshus, but now that he had gone in there not for Nisuin, but only in order to test her sense of smell, then part of the question is also part of the discussion between the Rishonim on the implications of the story. Did she pass the test or did she fail it? Because if we say that he had a radish with him, and she mentioned in her answer a date, does that mean that she truly didn't smell, she taka couldn't smell that it was a radish, and she thought that he might be carrying a date? Or is it like the Rashbam is saying, she knew that he's carrying a radish, and she's saying, you know what, radishes go well with dates? Or is it bechlal or is it to begin with that he brought along a date, which was the Rashbam's other explanation, and she taka smelled it and commented on it? But now also in addition you have the question again whether she was an Arusa or whether she was an Asua. The Rashbam is saying it's impossible to say that she was an Arusa, because then what's the question, whether he yarshins her or not? And Tosfos is saying there is a way, because we could be talking about that the Nisuin would take place in that churva. But then it would come out, in other words, that it wasn't, in fact, she didn't have a lack of a sense of smell. He took along dates with him, and she answered back with dates, or he brought along a radish, and she mentioned dates, because they go well together, so therefore it means that she passed the test, but the only problem is that they hadn't gone in there for the sake of Nisuin, but rather for the sake of him testing her. So then also Tosfos discusses that last point of the Rashbam's, that once he decides to divorce her, he doesn't get payrus. But in general, that we're saying that once he decides to divorce her, then he wouldn't yarshin her anymore. Tosfos says it's actually not so simple. There is some discussion about it among the poskim.
Is there any talk as to why this whole story had to be in a churba? Why couldn't it be in a room in the house, and where they live, or where they're gonna live?
No, the pastor, he wanted a private area where nobody's going to see them, because I guess he figured if it turns out that she doesn't have a sense of smell, it would be embarrassing to him. But I don't know. It doesn't say why. I mean, the Gemara elsewhere mentions you're not even supposed to go into a churba because of the danger. And you see over here that collapsed on them, so on her at least. So, if nothing else, we learn from the story to be careful about when the Chacham say don't go into a churba. There's good reason for it. But yeah, why?
Right, you can go into your private house. You know, you don't go to your.
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Onward. The Mishnah had said, the Mishnah had said that if he gave her a small amount of sivlonis, where she's going to be using them when she's still living at home with her parents. And then we said, those he doesn't collect back, even if, for whatever reason, the wedding doesn't take place. So the Gemara says, Yosef Ravin Sava Kamedera Papa. Ravin Sava, where Sava means the elder. So this is, there was a younger Ravin, I guess, and then there was an elder Ravin, who was sitting as a Talmud in front of her Papa. The Yosef Akama, he was sitting and saying the following din. Ben Shemesa Hiu, Ben Shemeshu, whether she died or whether he, the Chosen, died, either way, or Hodor Hu, or also if he backed out and doesn't want to continue with the Nisuin and he wants to divorce her, in all those cases, then we say Sivloinus Hadri, then the Sivloinus have to be returned to him, but Michael Mishdalai Hadri, but the food and drink not, because if he ate the Suras Chosin over there, because again we said that on Omer Aleph, since they're Asurim Livolos, they're meant to be used up, and he ate the Suras Chosin over there, so therefore he's Moichel on them, when he ate a dinner's worth of food, as we learned on Omer Aleph. But Ravin Sava continued, Hadrit Ba'ihi, but if she's the one who backed out and doesn't want to go through with the wedding, then Hadra Afilo Kisha Diyarka, then everything he's entitled to back, even a bundle of vegetables, even though it's also Livolis, and even though it's a small amount, etc. But the fact that she backed out is basically, in other words, because she's causing him a hezek. Omer Rav Huna Brei de Rav Yeshua, so Rav Huna Brei de Rav Yeshua says, actually what you do is shomen lahem dmei bosa bezoil. What you do is, as far as the meat, we evaluate the cheaper price of meat. When they return him it, when they return him the value of the food, we figure out the cheaper price, which is generally assumed to be two in halacha. We assume that to be 2/3 of the usual price. About the Gemara says, about kama bezoil ab tilta means up to 1/3. In other words, they pay 2/3 of the value of what they ate. If the food still exists, then they return it. But if it doesn't exist and they ate it, in general, we have in a number of areas in halacha where we say that when food was eaten, when it wasn't supposed to have been, then they pay 2/3 of the value of it. And the idea being, in other words, a person would be willing to buy meat. If they, let's say a person is not particularly out to buy meat right now, but he finds it available for 2/3 of the price, 33% off, he would go and buy it anyway, even if he didn't have particular plans to eat meat. So therefore we can say, in other words, that they would have bought the meat for that price regardless, even if they knew what's going to happen, and therefore that would be the price that they have to pay. The Rambam also mentions in this connection, he says, he brings from his Rebbeim, from the Rini Gash, and so forth, that if the Minigam Medina was also a person gets engaged, he makes a party, he makes a Lachayim, he gives out money to the Chamoshim, Chazonim, and whatever, to help. Publicize the wedding and whatever, and then she backs out of it, then she would have to pay everything, because here we wouldn't say even Dmei Bosa Bezoil, here we would say she has to pay back all of the costs that he incurred, because then it's basically she caused him to lose that money. It's considered Dinah Degarmi. She would be chayav to pay because she caused him a hezek. Okay. Now we're getting back to, after the last couple of Mishnayos, we've talked about the dinim involving chasanim and sivloinus and shushvinus and all. So now we're going to get to the topic of a shchiv merah and his presence, and we're going to continue going with that for a while. So the Mishnah says, shchiv merah shekosav kol mechosav la'achedim. If a shchiv merah, so he's on his deathbed, he figures he's going to die soon, and he writes out a document giving all his nechosim to others, not to his yoshim. For that matter, the Rashbam says that that the same thing would apply even if he didn't write it, even if he said it, because the words of a shchimera are k'ksuvin v'chemesur and domur, they're considered as though they're written and as though they're written and signed. So he did that. The shir kalka kol shehu. If he left over for himself even a small amount of kalka, matnose kayemes, then his matana is binding, meaning even if he recovers. If he had given away everything, then as we're going to learn later on, then he gets it all back. Because we can assume, as the Gemara is going to explain, that he only gave it away because he thought he's going to die, and now that he recovered, then he gets it all back. But if he left anything for himself, he knows he can't take it with him after he's gone anyhow. So therefore, Therefore, it would mean that his matana is a matana. So therefore, it shows that he expected he's going to recover, and therefore it's just a matnas bori rather than a matnas shchitmana. So therefore, it's a complete full fledged matana. The Rashbam does add, we do have to talk about that there was a kinyan involved over here, because a matnas bori does require a kinyan. Continues the Mishnah, lo shiur karka kol shehu, but if he didn't leave over for himself any amount of karka, ein matnasa kayemes, then his matana is not valid if he recovers, because then the point is, we understand that even if there was a kinyan, he gave everything away because he figured that he's not going to recover. He obviously didn't mean to make himself that he's going to have nothing else left, and he's going to have to take tzedakah or something. So therefore, in other words, the Gemara is going to call it what's called umdana. We have a very strong reason to suppose that he wouldn't have given it away, all away, if he knew he was going to recover, and therefore it was almost like it was on a tnai that only if he dies. So the Gemara says, man tana dazlin and basa umdana. Which tana is it that says that we go according to an umdana like that, even though he didn't say anything explicitly? So Rav Nachman says that would be specifically Rav Shimon ben Menasseh says that. Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, we learned this earlier in the Masechta as well. Suppose that a person's son went overseas, the father hears a report that his son died, and he figures he doesn't have any other children. The Omad is this was his only son, so now as far as he knows, he has no children to yarshin him. The Omad v'kosav kol nechosav l'acher, and he goes and writes a shtar giving all of his nechosim to somebody else, because he figures his son is dead. I guess he didn't want his brothers or his cousins or whoever to yarshin it. V'achakach bobnoi, and then later on his son shows up. Matnase matana, so the Chum says matana is still a valid matana, because if he had said, I'm doing it only because as far as I know my son is dead, would be one thing, but because he didn't say, the Chum said we don't go according to umdana, we say that the gift is a gift. Reb Shimon ben Menasseh, I mean, ain't matnase matana. Whereas Reb Shimon ben Menasseh says it's not a gift. Because we understand that he did it only because if he had known that his son was alive, he wouldn't have written it in the first place. The word she'umole over here was in parenthesis, actually, not because it doesn't belong in the Gemara, but because there's actually two different words. Tosfos elsewhere points out that there's two different words. There's ilmole with an aleph at the end, which means if not, and then there's ilmole with a yud at the end, which means if. So here the word is really supposed to be she'omole, that if, with a yud, if he had known that his son was alive, he never would have written out such a shahr. So therefore we see that Shimon Manasseh follows this concept of umdana, that we don't just look at what was actually written in the shahr, we look at the circumstances under which it was written, and we determine things based on that. That's one answer. Rav Sheshes Shazuri. Rav Sheshes says another possibility is our Mishnah goes according to Rav Shimon ben Shazuri. The Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, it's actually a Mishnah and Gittin, so the Tznan, Barishonu Hoyu Oimim, originally the Chachamim used to say, now normally when a person says, normally if a person gives instructions to write a get for his wife, that's not enough. He has to tell them, write the get and deliver it. Otherwise it just means he wants to have it written and he wants to have it available for when he chooses to give it. But Barishonu Hoyu Oimim, originally the Chachamim used to say, when a person is being taken out in chains to be executed by the government, and he knows he only has a short while longer to live, and he says, write a get for my wife, because he doesn't want to leave, because he doesn't want there should be a situation of yibum or chalitza. Then they can write it and they can give it. He didn't say give it. We understand that a time like that, he doesn't mean to say just write it, I want to keep it. He obviously means to give it. He was in a panic and he didn't think of mentioning that they should give it as well. Later on, the Chachamim changed their mind and said, not only when this case, when he's being taken out to be executed, afam afarish, the same thing applies when a person is going to go in on a sea voyage, v'ayotze b'shiyara, or where he's going to be traveling in a caravan across the desert. There also, it's not quite as risky as where he's going to be executed, but nevertheless, the Chachamim decided that in those cases also, there's enough reason to say And he's not Stam playing games. We say that he taka does mean to give it, and he was just busy and he forgot. Reb Shimon Shizuri Omer Afam Asukan, and Reb Shimon Shizuri says also that would apply to somebody who's dangerously sick, like a shlimra. So therefore, again, the idea being, why would he be wanting them to write a get is, again, to pater her from Yibum, but again, because he was sick, he didn't think of mentioning the point about giving it. So therefore, we see Reb Shimon Shizuri holds that you can go according to Umdana. Tosfos actually points out that according to this opinion, really it wouldn't be only Reb Shimon Shizuri. The Chachamim, who are disagreeing with him, apparently agree with that idea as well. They're saying, fine, it doesn't apply to a Shtigmata, but in general, we see that a person is going on a voyage, then we say we go according to Umdana. So that's one possibility. When we say Reb Shimon Shizuri, we don't mean only him. We mean the other Chachamim who are involved with him in this Machalitis. Or maybe because Reb Shimon Shizuri makes it more clear that we go according to Umdana, which is why we mention him. Tosfos also, by the way, brings up the point. Now, you have the opposite. Here we're saying you go according to Umdana. What about you have a concept, Dvarim Shebelev Einim Dvarim, that you don't go according to what a person is thinking in his mind? Tosfos refers to a discussion of theirs in Kiddushin on this subject, where they explain it there, they discuss it at some length over there, and they say there's different degrees of Umdana, where it's very clear from the circumstances what it's going to be, then yes, we can say we go according to Umdana. Where it's not so clear, then we would say Dvarim Shabalei Veinim Dvarim. Okay, anyway, so the point is that we have Reb Nachman and Reb Sheshes saying that our Mishnah would be like Reb Shimon and Menasseh or Reb Shimon Shizuri, respectively. The question is, why does each one knows of the other one's source? Reb Nachman, my time, alay mukim lakir Reb Shimon Shizuri. Why does Reb Nachman not want to say that our Mishnah is like Reb Shimon Shizuri? Why does he dafka say that it has to be like Reb Shimon and Menasseh? And the answer is shiny hossam. Because it's different in the case of in Reb Shimon Shizuri's case, because after all, at least he did say write a get. Otherwise, why would he tell him to write a get? So as opposed to over here, he didn't say anything indicating that he's doing machnas misa, that he's doing because he feels he's going to die soon. So therefore, Reb Nachman says that's not a good enough reason for umdana. But in Reb Shimon Menasseh's case, where also he didn't say anything, he just wrote out the document, and later on a son shows up, then that more parallels our Mishnah. Reb Sheshes, my time, alay mukim lakir Reb Shimon Menasseh. What about why doesn't Reb Sheshes want to say that our Mishnah is like Reb Shimon Menasseh? And the answer is umdana de mukach shiny. Because in the case of Reb Shimon Menasseh, it's very, very clear. He wouldn't have written out such a thing if he had known his son was alive. He wouldn't give all his nechassim to anybody else. If he had meant to do that, if he had meant to disinherit his son, he would have done it while his son was alive. He wouldn't have waited until he heard that his son is dead. So that doesn't show, in other words, by a regular shlimra, where, after all, many people do recover. Roiv cholim l'chayim, you have a concept in halacha. Most sick people do recover, so therefore we don't have a strong enough reason, says Rav Sheshes, to say that Rav Shimon Menasseh's din should apply in this case. But on the other hand, we do have the case where Rav Shimon Shizuri says, afa masukan, a person who is dangerously ill. We do assume that when he says write a get, he means to also deliver it. The same way over here, we can say that it means when he says write out my nechassim, or give out my nechassim, he means only in case he does end up dying. So therefore, it is a strong enough umdana that we can decide the halacha on that basis. Okay, so then the Gemara is going to continue, and we'll learn tomorrow Be'ez Hashem more on this topic of umdana and in general about the will and the instructions of a shlimra.
The word umdana means the outcome, what he has in mind.
Umdana means an evaluation. Oimed, which is the shortest of the word umdana, means to estimate. So it means we evaluate what he had in mind.
What he had in mind.
Right.
Okay. Got it.
Reference here.